I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Dom Giordano on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Hey, it is Dom time. In a moment, we're going to go to Health and Human Services. They're on the front lines of fighting this. But you know what? You and I are here in Pennsylvania, and I don't want to forget this in the heat of all the stuff going on around me today. And I was just telling Dan this. We had a great guest yesterday. This is an amazing statistic, and sadly, the media at the Inquirer is not picking up on it. Maybe they don't get it. So we have 6.6 million Americans, I've just seen, doubling what people that applied nationwide for unemployment last week. California, of course, think of population, right? California leads the country. Pennsylvania is second. About 406,000 of our fellow citizens in Pennsylvania filed unemployment claims for the first time last week, pushing the state's two-week total to 783,000. The second most in the country, Dan, behind California. New Jersey reported 205,000, up from 115,000. So New Jersey, a hotbed of the virus, has about 320,000. Here's my point. I think you're getting it. This must end here in Pennsylvania with what Wolf has done. He has exceeded his authority. He has shut down too many businesses. That's a job that we have to get on. So I would tell you this all day long during the show, bother your local state senator or representative that's a Republican. Don't even bother with the Democrats. They don't care. And tell them they better rectify this. And you know how to rectify it through my show, the guy we had on yesterday. Why is Pennsylvania the second in the country? More unemployment claims than New York, Dan. More unemployment claims by a lot than New Jersey. In what universe is that possible? It's because of Wolf, number two in the entire country. All right, I'll get back to that. I just wanted to get out there on thinking about it. Let me go, and I apologize to our guests for waiting, but Deputy Secretary of Health and Human Services Eric Hargan joins us from their offices in Washington here on Talk Radio 1210. Hey, Deputy Secretary, thank you very much. I apologize. We're pretty fired up with what's happening here in Pennsylvania.
Oh, I understand.
Well,
good to be with you.
Same here. And you guys are on the front lines of a lot of this. And I think really your department has turned into the ultimate red tape cutters. And you're doing an outstanding job with that. But it's amazing how much red tape, even when all hands should be on deck, are out there when it comes to testing and vaccines. Tell us a little bit about what you're trying to do.
Yes. Well, we have accelerated at our agencies a lot of regulatory reform that's happening in short order. You had the FDA has now approved something around 20 different new diagnostic tests, many times under the emergency use authorization in 24 hours or under, in terms of working with private sector to move these things forward really, really rapidly. And that shows that's a testament both to the fact that the private sector has so many promising projects out there to help address this issue, both on the side of diagnostics, in other words, telling people whether they have something or not, or therapeutics or vaccines or devices that can help address this issue. So that's been fantastic to see people step up with good ideas, sound ideas, things that can be seem to be safe and help address this crisis right now. But yes, there is a lot of accumulated red tape. You've seen that the president's from the very beginning identified cutting red tape as important for this administration. It's the first one in history to actually bring down the level of regulation as opposed to simply slow its rise. You usually would see one administration, you'd see rapid rise in regulation. The next one, you'd see it slow. Same every time. This time we've seen it come down. And now we're seeing in this moment of crisis, people are really understanding that these kind of bureaucratic impediments can have terrible impacts on a nation in a crisis like this.
Why is it so hard? Is it just inertia, Deputy Secretary, when these things are in play, even if the situation changes? Is it that the bureaucrat state, which is really the fourth branch of our government, founding fathers never would have guessed that, but it is. It has been for 20 since Lyndon Johnson, I think, really encapsulated that. What is it that's so difficult about removing those things? What's the power that you face in doing that?
Well, sometimes you look at a past regulatory regime and you realize it hasn't been updated in long periods of time, and it really reflects a prior understanding of how the government's supposed to work. The way I always put it is that no one would put up with a 50-year-old TV in their house, but we have 50-year-old regulatory regime.
Right.
So people don't really want to drive a car with a 50-year-old motor. They don't want a 50-year-old TV. But people put up with a regulatory system that is decades old and a desperate need of refurbishing. I think this has drawn this into real stark contrast for people. And in many cases, though, the old regime, just to give it its due credit, was focused on absolute safety, pure safety. People want 100% assurance that something's going to be like exactly right for them. And the risk-reward calculus changes when people realize that there's a crisis, and everyone moves faster. Industry moves faster, the public moves faster, and the government moves faster because they see a crisis. The question is going to be whether we go back to the old ways when this crisis, God willing, passes.
Well, Eric, if I might, Deputy Secretary, the point is you hear people on the left talk about the new normal and they want online voting, which I have a lot of problems with, drones in the air and all that. What you're saying, I hope, is the new normal, that we start to push back against these and we ask these very questions that you guys are dealing in a crisis. It's unmasking what's been going on here. And sometimes it's not bad intent. It's just inertia and things change and these regulations don't change with them. And the cost-benefit analysis definitely has to be part of it rather than, you know, we can make every car only go to 25 miles an hour and we'd have fewer auto deaths. I don't think the American public would put up with that.
That's a great way of expressing that. And I think that these are the kinds of lessons that we need to take with us when we're moving forward on how to see how we respond more effectively in the future to things that happen. These kinds of things are inevitable. Viruses mutate. Every year they mutate. And the flu, as everyone knows now, kills tens of thousands of people every year. That's a case that nature doesn't sit still while we're trying to respond to these crises. And we have to undertake a thoughtful look when the crisis passes at what lessons we need to take forward into the future. That is, and it's not just the people, as you've pointed out very well. There are people who are thinking of lessons that probably don't have much to do with this crisis. They brought forward ideas in the middle of this that really don't have much to do with the crisis we're facing. But issues like this are central to how we are going to have to deal with these things in the future. So I hope we, you know, and that there's support out there for us to move forward on these after this is over.
Absolutely. Now, are you guys having discussions about face protectors or face coverings, not medical masks? Because we definitely are here in Talk Radio.
Well, you know, the president has talked about that. He talked about it as recently as yesterday, that the issue about face masks and those kinds of things. I think that there's a lot of discussion going on. The president signaled that inside about exactly what recommendations would be coming out from the administration. He mentioned there's all kinds of alternatives to it. I think yesterday he had mentioned scarves and other things like that. He was, you know, we're going to be looking at that technically speaking, internally here at the department about what works and what doesn't in this, because we don't want, no one wants to keep good things from people or advise them not to do things that are helpful to them. But you also want to make sure people get accurate information about what's likely to protect them and what not. So we don't want to give weird, so we're trying to strike a balance here in formulating advice for the American people on what they should be doing.
I hear you, and I know it's a tough thing. I would just say there's a bit of urgency on this, and I think you would agree. So the powers that be, I think, have to come to a decision here about this. I'm in the president's camp, and I think we're not talking surgical masks, but protecting yourself to some degree. Yeah. I don't see any harm, so it's do no harm.
That is exactly what the president said.
Yes.
What harm could it do?
Yes.
I think that's a good statement. What harm could it do?
Absolutely. So, Deputy Secretary, thank you very much for joining us. We do invite you back as this continues, and thanks for the good information today.
Sure. Thank you.
Tom Giordano, weekdays 9 till noon on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.